Well, welcome, listeners, to Changing Steps. Today, we are excited again to visit with Dr. Marie-José Diaz, who was born and educated in France. She is a registered art therapist and certified expressive therapist, as well as a registered play therapy supervisor, and she's a certified child psychotherapist and play therapist supervisor with our own Canadian Association for Child and Play Therapy, as well as a registered clinical counselor. And she holds diplomas in family therapy and EMDR and has over 35 years' experience as a counselor and adult and child psychotherapist. Internationally, she's been teaching the therapeutic methods that she's developed, particularly in the field of abuse, loss, and trauma for the past 25 years. And we are catching her on the advent of her going and teaching a Santre workshop in another part of British Columbia. So thank you so much for agreeing to meet with me again today when you're so busy.
Yes.
It's so lovely.
I need your questions today.
That's okay. We decided to meet again so soon because in our last interview, the whole discussion of the importance of attunement came up, and you had said that you think that's a really important starting point for new therapists to understand. So I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you about how you talked about the importance of attunement in terms of the therapist grounding themselves.
Well, yes, and where the whole work starts is first the therapist has to be in that place of groundedness, neutrality, and compassion, whichever way the therapist has a way of getting themselves there. And from that place, they then being able to where they contain and hold their own needs, they contain and hold whatever is going on with them, but they are then available for their focus and attention to be totally on the primary need of the client that is in front of him or her. And that means a focus and concentration where one is able to really observe the child and with all your senses, whether by what you see, by what you hear, by what you feel, the thoughts that cross your mind, all these things one needs to be very awake to and listen to and keep track of in a way. As you begin to approach this child and always noticing how much distance, for instance, this child, physical distance, even the child is comfortable with, how much being looked at they're comfortable with, how much, what are they drawn to? So without that total being there for them and what their primary need is and where this child is at, totally in that present moment, whatever you're going to do, you're going to miss the child in front of you.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't matter how skilled you are and how much you know. If you're doing it for some and not meeting them where they are, there's no efficacy in whatever you're doing.
As you're speaking, I had a situation in the last 6 months with a little boy I'd been working with for a few years, and he had been in crisis in his placement, and in the session he misinterpreted that he thought I was laughing at him, and in a second the look crossed his eyes, and within 1 second started to pull shelving off the walls and get extremely aggressive. And my heart just went out to him because, though, is he accountable for his behavior? Sure. Is it new behavior? No. But I missed clearly something really important to not be able to assess that he would receive my nonverbal communication that way. I wasn't attuned with him in that moment.
Yeah. And you see, that demands attunement to yourself, to the child, and the relationship.
Yes.
That's a lot going on at once. So we really, it is a lot of focus and awareness being there for especially the children who are so tender and so reactive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And misinterpreting, and we have to be so wide awake in all the parts of ourselves.
Yes.
We can't still be preoccupied with a previous client. We can't be preoccupied with what we have to do after. they're gone.
So how do you do that?
Oh my goodness! I've been practicing for 35 years unsuccessfully a lot of the time. No, some of the time I should say.
I feel the same way. I have rarely had a situation like that, but the learning that I walked away from that situation was huge.
Yeah, and we have to forgive ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Or we all are working on being more and more attuned in all these different ways, more and more awake and more present. And that's a development that demands self-knowledge and practice and really a commitment to that in and of itself. See, if your commitment is to just learn new techniques and have more information, first and foremost, and forget that whole part, I'm concerned when I see that happening. Because
right.
I do see that happening in the field, in all the field of mental health.
Yes.
And that's why I'm still teaching instead of kayaking. Because I believe it's crucial.
Absolutely, and it's so necessary. So when you have a brand new therapist sitting in front of you, what is the beginning? What kind of ideas do you share with them about grounding? Because I think the pressure we have sometimes is to see one client right after another with no time to transition.
Well, the first thing is time management.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be in charge of our plate and learn how to say no.
Yeah.
And I know this is difficult, let me tell you.
Yeah.
You know, but more is not always better.
Right.
So we need to have that chunk of time. I give myself it's a 50-minute session, and then after that I have the 10 minutes, and then I give myself 30 minutes before my next client. I cannot, there was a time where I could give myself 15 and I was managing. I know now, being older and slower at cleaning up and all that, and processing at a different depth, it's necessary. And yet, I can't catch up with the notes even. That has to be, it's very demanding.
Oh, that's a whole
but
other discussion.
There's got to be a clearing in between.
Yeah. I find the same thing. I'm very aware of that in the sand tray, when someone is going from the sand tray, and the importance of not only clearing the images, but clearing the sand and energetically having time in between clients. But I think we forget it in our own energy.
Yeah. Well, we forget because we're busy and there's always more, and that's part of it is the pressure that's being put on especially young therapists who, you know, I feel they have to meet the needs of others in a way that they might not be able to, because I think the more confidence we have in ourselves, the more we're able to say, no, this, I cannot do this.
Yes.
This is not my expertise. No, this isn't. No, I don't know this. It takes quite a bit of self-esteem and a kind of a certainty in oneself that you can admit the things you don't know.
Yes.
And that's why with getting older, I know less and less, of course.
Now you mentioned about the notes. Do you have some some therapists?
My Achilles heel.
I know.
That's
Achilles
heel.
It's mine too. And over the years, I've struggled with. Okay, I'll speak into a little tape recorder, and then I'll transcribe them later.
Uh-huh. I did that too.
Or I'll type them. Or I'll use. I'll write them longhand.
Yeah.
Or someone shared with me. Linda Hollmeyer shared with me a one-page sheet that she gives to students around, you know, ticking themes. But and that will do it, but it doesn't do it for me.
It doesn't
speak to the learning what showed up that day. It's just I always struggle with that, and I don't think there's not a right answer, but
well, the reality is I don't like it. I don't like writing notes.
No.
And the reason why I do it is because my memory isn't as good as it used to be, so I need to keep track. And in case I'm being asked, I need to keep track. But there's a whole other thing that showed up. When I first started, there was no such thing, or hardly at all, as going to court.
Yes.
So you could write anything you wanted in your notes.
Yes.
You could write to yourself and you could reflect on them. Now you always have the possibility, your notes could be, you know, subpoenaed, and they could be in this person's files for, you know, 30 years from now, and it will follow them.
Yes.
That's very serious.
Yes, it is. It's a serious
so,
business.
So whatever we write down, we really need to be careful of. So for me, it's my note-taking now, and I prefer to be told I am a bad therapist and do something that's going to be harmful to someone. So my note-taking is I take pictures, and I put a few words.
Yes.
And that's where I like technology now. That's really has improved my life greatly with being able to have the digital camera. And you can take all the details, put a few words. And so you, in that way, being visual, I have the memory. But someone who would read it, who might be misusing it, cannot do so because they won't understand the language. Now, I will say what's going to be helpful for this child. So if there is something that, you know, for the child's protection or you know, any disclosure or anything like that, that's a different matter.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I know one time my mentor, Gisela, who we spoke with the last time, said
yes.
to me one time, she said, I brought the sand tray into court. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I had a picture of the sand tray, as I always do, and I showed them. I brought it in and showed them and let them decide what they thought was there. And I thought, well, that's a creative way to do it. We have actually in Ontario, because, of course, every province, just like in the States, every state has their own ruling, we're going to CACPT is going to have a workshop that's being facilitated by a children's lawyer who's going to present to therapists and teachers and child and youth workers around, you know, what the court's looking for in terms of process and what that's all about. Because it's always intimidating for someone the first time they're subpoenaed. But, and it's it's kind of like a different process than what we really want to be going into providing therapy for anyway.
Yes. And you see, what we're talking about are all the different pressures that take us away from the focus, which is to give this child a safe place to heal himself or herself. And that's very sacred process that we need to keep safe, and we need to keep it free of it being impinged upon by the system, but whomever might have different kinds of agendas other than the one to that particular one.
Yes.
And whether it's the parent who absolutely needs the child to have a different behavior, and I understand that. However, that's my focus, is to be there for this child.
Mm-hmm.
And then work with the parent to help the parent see and have more, you know, perhaps be more with being able to enter the child's world, so they begin to be able to have that empathic understanding also, and can be there with it in a different way, and also learn to deal with it in a more grounded and, you know, calm way while they're dealing with it and all that part of it, right? So
it's so important. How do you teach how do you teach parents that? Do you have any?
Well, I find I help them learn, you know, I usually with people, I observe them. I listen to their language. I listen to the metaphors in their language. But also I guide them towards finding out what it is that they absolutely love, that something that makes them feel good.
Yes.
And that simplicity of thinking of something that makes you feel good, or having a little something with you that makes you feel good and therefore helps you take a deep breath and therefore come back more in your body in a more centered way, I found that very helpful. But first, we have to notice us when we're not.
Yeah.
So it's beginning that process of self-reflection and self-observation and being very forgiving to oneself, so that they don't feel judged, and they don't become more hitting themselves over the head every time they notice they're not perfect. That doesn't help, right? So it's helping them develop this kind self-awareness. So there's no quick fix to that one.
No, and as you were speaking, I was thinking of a lot of my practices working with families that have adopted older children. And
yes.
when I meet with the parents, they're struggling with the behaviors. And I usually try to start off with, let's go to the beginning. Why did you fall in love with this little person? What do you love about this little person? And let's focus on those wonderful things, because it's easy to get that to get lost in dealing with
the behavior.
Yeah,
and that's a good one for couples, too.
Yes, yeah.
Sorry, I just interrupted you.
No, I did the same thing with couples, too. I usually say to them, how did you fall in love? What's your love story? And then they smile and they talk a little bit about their love story. And that helps with the children, because then I'll say to them, have you ever shared that story with your son or your daughter? That's really important, because they haven't been around a lot to hear the family stories. Focusing on that good stuff, it's so easy to then just focus on the behaviors, isn't it?
Yeah, but it takes a lot. I mean, it takes... See, part of it is when we see this, that we connect with something, but then the day-to-day living with what's in the way of them to being what we saw is the difficulty, you see?
Yeah.
Because yes, this child is got this beauty and this what I might call their true nature is what they saw usually.
Yeah.
They got an inkling of and a recognition of that. Now, all the behaviors that are being caused by through the different traumas that they have gone through and all the blocks that are in the way of that connection with their self. That's what the therapy is for, to help express and transform those blocks so they can be more and more connected to that true nature, you see. So it's helping them to be there with the disconnection from themselves as well as what the child is experiencing. Because a certain misbehavior can trigger in the adoptive parent some of their own blocks, you see.
Yeah.
And some of their own reactivity. And then you have those two dancing, which could be what we might call a negative transference and counter transference.
Yep.
And it's the same process for therapists as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we have to know not just the connection. So the grounding is remembering to connect and ground and connect to our strengths and our knowing and all those wonderful part of it. But it's also being willing and able to recognize our triggers, to see them and to do something about them not dancing and taking over the therapy process.
Yes, and sometimes I find when we're new and green, it's hard to admit that, you know, this client invokes something internally.
That's right. It's hard to say, you know, I don't look forward to seeing this child, but that's a reality.
Yeah, it's so true.
Uh-huh.
Which then speaks to the importance of good supervision, doesn't it?
When it's more, in my experience, in my book, it takes more than supervision. The supervisor is there to help, you know, recognize there's a trigger, but if it's maintained and it's so strong, I think it's very important the therapist takes advantage of what's been shown to them and has come to the surface to work on it.
Yeah.
And that's where the instrument of who we are becomes more and more neutral and compassionate, because it's become more and more connected, because each time we have the opportunity to express and transform for ourselves some of these blocks that are in the way of providing the safety and the clarity and the compassion and the true attunement that we're after. So it's an ongoing process, and I think it's a path of self-development for me.
Well, and for me, it speaks to the importance of, as you so aptly said, it isn't just supervision, but being open to perhaps getting our own therapy periodically. I mean,
it's
so important. It's just so important.
When I started 35 years ago, there were a lot of crazy stuff going on in the 70s, but one of them, it was not a crazy one, is we were expected to do our own work. And I'm very troubled when this is not happening anymore. And you know, when you're alone in that little room with a child, you know, stuff comes up. It's not like sitting in a chair and talking across to somebody else.
No.
You're alive in this room. Things get triggered. And I think it's ethical it's, you know, the ethics of making oneself a safer and safer instrument is essential. And to make sure that of how we're reflecting what's truly happening instead of doing it through distorted glasses, which I see a lot of.
Mm-hmm. Well, you spoke to techniques, people focusing just on a very directive model using techniques. So that kind of scary.
If you use that technique, and that technique is being created now for this particular child exactly, you have the sense of timing and everything, that means you have the attunement. In my mind, the less experience you have, the more non-directive you stay.
Right.
It is not safe to practice surgery when you're just learning first aid.
Right.
It is not safe.
Right.
And a lot of the techniques, so you're going to have a big opening and a big catharsis, but is that what the child needed? Was this child able to digest what has come up? What arrogance to think you know exactly when and how this trauma is ready to come up and just go and play with it. Because one went to a workshop where all these things you've been promised that when you walk out of there, you're going to have all these things you will know and know how to use immediately. I have great concerns, and the people who are doing that have no experience in expressive therapies, and this is what they're using. Now, I'm you can see why I'm not terribly popular sometimes, huh?
No, I'm sitting here thinking how excited I am that we have you for a few minutes to talk about this, because this can be available to people. They can listen to this interview and hear this. That's what
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, actually. I was
thinking. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you like it, but I'm not terribly – this part of what I say is not always very popular, as you might imagine.
But it's so important, because that's the wisdom that sometimes can get lost in technique books.
Yes.
Right.
And it's based on a lot of experience.
Yeah, and I often say to interns, 1 + 1 isn't always 2. Sometimes it's 3, sometimes it's 1, sometimes it's 5. And mm-hmm. It's good to have an idea and a plan of what you're going to do. But I know this is – it's actually what you're saying has been really reassuring for me, because I've had at some stages of my career seen colleagues plan everything out. And they'll say, hey, don't you do that? And I was like, no, I know it's there, but I show up and I want to see the client in the way they've shown up. And then I figure out what we're going to do that day.
Yeah, you see, if a child walks in and they like a dark, murky red,
yeah,
okay, and you meet them with a blue
mm-hmm.
or a yellow, you're going to miss them.
Right.
You need a kind of geranium red to meet them. And that's what I that's what I mean by attunement. Like
right.
going close enough to where they're at, and then through the following and guide them to a kind of a healthier hue in the color.
Right.
That's going to help them flush the stuckness, which is what's making them act out.
Yes.
Not knowing how to be with the feeling and letting it and flushing it and letting it flow, but being stuck.
And that happens, yeah, it's absolutely, and then that reminds me of sometimes, you know, parents or foster parents who may say, I'm worried that therapy's not helping because clearly there's a reaction to the process
uh-huh.
in the child. And and sometimes that can be okay, it's maybe going too fast, sometimes maybe it just is because it is, it's really tough, I think it's, I'll say to parents ahead of time, it's important for us to be aware of how the child is before and after the session. And sometimes you are, when shifts happen, you're going to see a child who is having a hard time with that. And we need to notice that and support them.
Well, yeah, because you see, the blocks don't come up just you know, sometimes they have their own speed of coming up. And as they're coming deeper, closer to the surface, it feels more uncomfortable.
Yes.
And it might be a while before they kind of really come up and express and transform. And that's why, you know, I use what I call the healing inside out and outside in to help them be with the discomfort of it. And that's why I'm so kind of very careful in the guiding part.
Right.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that when we have you as a focus of an article with the Canadian Association for Child and Play Therapy magazine, you're going to be listed in the spring issue of Playground, and that inside out, outside in terms of elements in the playroom was so striking to me.
Well, it's there for soothing and safety, you
right.
see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's going to be...
Because, it's a very... it's a very complex process to help someone be with their pain in a way that, you know, and to get closer to it, to express it, to transform it, and regain their aliveness and their connectedness to themselves so they can be guided from a healthier place, right?
Right.
Yeah. But that's being asked. We have to walk the talk.
Yes. Yes, we do.
I think.
It's hard sometimes, isn't it? Yeah.
It is very hard. It's all, anything I'm saying is much easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, with the paper piece, you talked about, the last time we talked, you talked about doing a phone call as an intake phone call. And I like to do that as well. If I can, if I'm working with a family, I like to actually go and visit them at their home first and have a cup of tea with them where they're at, and then transition to my place. Sometimes I really struggle with the form stuff as well. And that's my own thing in terms of I have intake forms I have to fill out, but I would much rather just sit and talk and have a cup
of
tea.
I find the intake form sometimes can be a helpful focus.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's always, again, whether it's a parent, a child, or whomever it is, going with their primary need.
Yes.
And remembering what they come to us for.
Yes.
What our mandate is, what our role is, and having clear boundaries and clear indications on how you're going to be together.
Yeah, focus can help, can't it? It's just hard. It's hard. I find it hard to do that. But
it's so difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. The focus can give a bit of containment to what's going to be inside, which is all this information they're giving you.
Yes.
If you meet a mother whose child has died recently and she wants you to see the little brother or sister, you know, your piece of paper might have to go on the side for a minute because
right.
it's incredibly painful, intensely so that they're bringing to you, and you need to be there for them so when they walk out, they're not falling apart more than when they walked in.
Yes.
Because they have to go back and be there for their child.
Yes.
So it takes a lot of...
holding.
Yeah. Holding is a good word. The capacity to hold is a big one.
Yes.
But you have to be strongly grounded to hold. And if you're not feeling well or... You know, a lot is going on in your life, many demands, because life doesn't stop because you're a therapist, then it takes even more groundedness and self-care.
Oh, truer words were never said.
it's
so true.
As I said, they're very easy said, and you always teach what you need to learn.
That's
true. The other part.
Do you find, I like to do sand trays on my own. Do you do that?
Oh, yes. Well, you see, when I first started doing the sand tray, there wasn't, you know, anybody doing sand trays. So, I didn't even know Dora Kauf did sand tray. So, that was part of my learning. Anything I do with other people, I practice it myself before I do it. And then I was doing it regularly for myself as well. So And eventually I found a colleague who was able to witness my sand trays, but I just couldn't afford to go to California to find someone.
But it is helpful if you can, even if I don't have anyone to witness, to you, to build on my own.
Yes.
I find that healing and grounding for myself.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. And I find I use imagery and metaphor for myself all the time in that way. And that's another, sometimes a really helpful way of closing one session, you know, of through a visualization for oneself, for me anyway, for metaphors, and some people find that helpful, so that you say goodbye to one world, take a deep breath, ground yourself before you open up the next one.
Yes. Sometimes I'll take images to create an altar, and then keep that to look at in between, from one time to the next, and that helps too. But I guess we all have to find our own way, don't we?
Yes. You know, one thing, the most helpful thing for me has been, is to clean up.
Yeah.
I find that not in my own house, but in the playroom, clean up can be a way of closing and saying goodbye to the child.
Right.
And I just love sweeping and washing the floor. And I find that cleanse, you know, it just helps me ground and say goodbye and getting the place clear for my next person.
Right.
There must be the, you know, the being raised and hearing about all the nuns who did that. I don't know where I got that from, where they would wash the floors and pray that way. I don't know. Not that I do. I'm not as... That's not my inclination now, but perhaps some of it comes from that. But I find cleaning really helpful. And the other part is going in my garden, because I have a garden, there's always a little weeding to do. You know, that can be for a few minutes. So sometimes my dogs need to walk around the block or need to play outside. So those things that are so connected to the earth.
Yes.
You know, and can be very, I found them very helpful. But then I understand, you know, some people don't have that luxury. I know that.
No,
you're always.
Your playroom and the pictures that you've shared are just, it is just lovely. I can't wait.
So when are you coming out?
Well, that's going to have to be the thing. I'll have to come and see in person, won't I?
You are. We have to meet. Yeah, we met, but we have to, that would be lovely.
That would be lovely. Well, and you know what? And our half hour is done, if you can believe it.
Yeah, so, I hope so.
Can you tell me, you said you're doing a workshop in Sand Tray in another part of the province? Where is that?
No, it's just in Vancouver.
The
Justice Institute?
Yes.
Of BC, they're offering a certificate on my approach to play therapy.
Oh, lovely.
I've been teaching their play therapy courses for 25 years at the Justice Institute. And so eventually the people wanted to have a certificate that showed that they'd taken all these courses.
Right.
So now they're doing that. It's different from certification, obviously, but it's a certificate so that they're being asked to, you know, to get their certificate. They take certain courses, which are the similar courses that you're being asked, you know, to be a certified play therapist.
Oh, that's lovely.
But, so I go there fairly often, 5 times a year.
Oh, my goodness. And do you bring some of your own images with you?
Well, it's funny that you say that. I've got my white dragon with big wings that I'm going to be taking with me, and one of my balls made out of felt, and I've got a little tray and some sand from Hornby Island, and so I always have my own image on my table when I'm teaching.
Yeah.
And they help me.
I did. I was teaching in Calgary last month for one day, and I had participants. I asked them to bring some images of different things, and then I brought my suitcase, and I have my round sand tray, and I now know, going through customs, they always say, what is that? So now I just say it's a big Frisbee, and I can get through. You know, they'll package it up pretty quickly. But if I say it's a toy or a sand tray, it's always mystified looks for a while. And having some of my own miniatures, I find really helpful.
Yeah,
I do
yeah.
the same thing.
Yes, I find I'm learning to travel lighter and lighter all the time. So usually I'll find a nice stone where I am, or a dandelion, or whatever, you know, something that even if it's, I have to find some, what people call might call weeds in the lawn, whatever. I'll try and find something that connects me to nature, really.
And isn't that, as you said that, I was thinking, isn't that the mantra for most therapists? We need to be traveling lighter and lighter.
Oh yeah.
You know, in terms of our own things and our own counter transference, working through those things so we can travel
all of
lightly.
It.
Yeah, all of it.
All of it.
Inside
all of
out.
It.
Well, thank yeah, you so much for joining us today. I just can't thank
you're
you.
You're very
enough.
Welcome.
And I hope you have a really lovely training. And,
I will.
And I let you know one more thing. I forgot to say that I sent you the link for this radio show and all the different interviews that have been done, and the first interview we did had the most listens.
Okay,
so thank you, listeners, for listening. Au revoir. And, for those of you that perhaps have some time at the end of April, the Canadian Association for Child and Play Therapy is hosting Dr. Athena Drews to come and present two wonderful workshops, and you can find more information about these on the website, www.cacpt.com. And have a wonderful day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Bye.